What is the name? Is it still a holiday special? Hello dear listener, hope you're an Android developer. Welcome back to The Context, episode 15. This time we are going to talk about the last year of 2017, so it's a retrospective episode. With me we have our co-host Arthur. Hey Arthur.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. How about you?
Oh great, great. I have changed job recently and I'm now working on a new company and yeah, therefore, it took a little bit longer to do this 2017 episode. Actually, we wanted to do it as a holiday special, but you know.
Things happen all the time.
Yeah. Okay. Before we start, I do have some statistics to share from our podcast, basically the top three most episodes from last year. So the episode number one listened by you listeners were episode 13, which was Conductor with Eric Cook. The episode 13, RX Java with David Carmack, was on the second place. And to complete the top three, it was episode 10, Kotlin Language Design Nitpicking with Dmitry Yaromov from JetBrains. So the top five countries our listeners listen to us are the United States, then followed by the United Kingdom, Germany, Russia, and India. So thanks everybody for listening. And we will try to produce a little bit more episodes more frequently this year, right?
Yeah, and with more famous people, as we see. These episodes are most popular, so we must get them.
Yeah, so let's get started. Let's dive in. I think we have divided our topics, or the topics we would like to discuss, are more Android-related and more not Android-related. What do you think if we start with Android-related stuff?
Yeah, sure. So maybe the first question will be, what was your favorite Android conference of this year? And maybe what's a favorite talk you heard or saw on YouTube?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's actually also a hard question to answer. For me, personally, it was, the talk by our friend and co-host Artem. But since he's our friend, it was about spec, but since he's our friend, I think it's not a good idea to say that was the best one, but there were multiple ones I really liked. So one was Spec by Arthur Zinnertolin, which was part of the Kotlin Conf, and he really dived deep into Spec, which also you have been working on over the last year, right?
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah.
Let's see.
And I really liked the way how he describes the advantages of using spec in terms of maintainability of your code, if the structure of your code. It was not that much about the, let's say, marketing thing like behavior-driven development, where you get out nice error messages and nice description of your tests, which is totally true. But the main selling point for me is more like structuring, reusability, and how you compose tests in groups and something like that. So apart from that, the number one talk for me this year was also in Kotlin Conf, which was given by Christina Lee with the name Two Stones, One Bird, Implementation Trade-Offs. And apart from the excellent content, I really liked her style of presentation. Was really awesome, really, really highly recommended video to watch if you are going to speak at some conference or whatever, local meetup. This is one of the talks I really can recommend for you as a new speaker to look up. Really awesome. What about you? What is your favorite?
So my favorite conferences are always DroidCon New York and DroidCon San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I like the London one, but it basically, I don't know, it's my opinion, but from my perspective, it is almost always about Google products.
Mm-hmm.
And like Firebase and Instant Apps and so on and so on. When New York and San Francisco ones are from, how would I name it, like end developers who just have some ideas and want to share them. So it's filled with this content. And my favorite Actually, I thought your favorite conference is the DroidCon New York because it has two MVI talks.
Yeah.
Not a single one. So that was kind of surprising, and you're the prophet of MVI on Android, as I think. And my favorite talk was at both of these conferences, and it's from Ray Ryan from the Square Register team, and it's named the Reactive Workflow Pattern, and the second one was the Reactive Workflow Pattern Update.
The later one was on DroidCon San Francisco, right?
Yeah. It was kind of updated from the New York one a little bit. What I liked about this talk is a real-life perspective. Basically, Ray discussed an experience in retrospective. Basically, how the Square Register was developed, what are key issues they encountered, and how did they solve them over time. So the thing I liked is that it is like existential experience from a project, and unfortunately I don't see a lot of these talks recently because maybe it's just too hard to think about the whole project and think what can be done better and how do you implement it. And at the same time, it has some interesting ideas. So yeah, it was kind of nice. I've kind of disappointed in conferences this year because I tried to apply to them, but it was too late, but it doesn't matter. But basically, when I went through all these sites and pages and looked through timelines, I saw that many of the talks are just repeating. So basically, there is a chance that a single person will go through all conferences and give us the same talk.
Yeah.
And it is kind of, I don't know, it just puts a little bit less value in conferences, from my opinion. And some people actually don't do this, like Jake Wharton, the famous one. He always gives a different talk, if you noticed. And basically, every conference he has a new team, and he has a new talk. It is quite rare that he actually repeats something. And this approach actually allows you to think that every time you see Jake, you hear something different. And you hear something interesting, and not just okay, I actually saw this on YouTube, so I'll just think, I'll listen to that person. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. But also at the same time, as I'm also speaking on some conferences from time to time, and also try to not repeat myself, but rather bring up new topics or recycle some old presentations where, let's say, I could use 20 slides or something like that. But at the end, it's some kind of similar but still different talk. I do understand why speakers would do that, like repeating talks for different conferences. A, they have to apply early for conferences, like the call of paper is open, let's say, now, and you apply your talk on 5 conferences, which will happen in the next half year. And yeah, then, yeah, you never know before why and which one will be accepted or in which conference you will be going to speak. And it's also a lot of time to put on new slides, new topics and stuff like that. So I do understand why people or why speakers do that. But yeah, from my point of view, from time to time, it's a little bit too much that actually the half of the conference is repeated and you could easily watch it over YouTube from another conference. That's also not what the audience deserves, kind of, right?
Yeah, I totally understand it. I'm not trying to offend anyone.
No.
But it's not just blaming. Maybe you should pick a single one, or maybe two conferences, and maybe some other person will take a slot and take a shot at the conference.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's kind of a personal opinion, but I have mixed back feelings about this.
Yeah. I think it's also worthwhile that, who was it? It was also Christina Lee who on Twitter started a poll and asked, is it okay to give the same talk? So how do you feel about it? And actually, if I remember correctly, and we will add a link to that tweet in the show notes, many followers and listeners basically have said, no, that's completely fine for me. I haven't seen it, so haven't seen it before. Usually I don't watch that much videos on YouTube, but I rather prefer to be in person there on a conference and listen to talks. So yeah, I understand your point, and I also think I have same feelings about it, but it seems that most of the people are fine with that. So yeah.
Okay, let's rant a little bit less. So what was your topic of the year? Like maybe what is the trend of the year? I think the answer is obvious, but let's hear you out.
Yes, so the trend for me last year was state management. And
okay, I've missed it.
But state management and model view intent, well, model view intent was just like a very little part of it, which is more about the UI and the separation of UI or the view layer from the model. But in general, I think that state management thing was my personal topic of the year. Other trends of obviously the architecture components with model view, view model stuff and something like that. But my personal topic was really state management, and well, actually all those blog posts and all these things I have written down last year were basically of the experience I have made over the last 2 years. So I would say in 2017, I wasn't focusing that much about model view intent anymore, because that was more in 2016 happened for me. But I still was very, very deep into state management things, and what we have built is some kind of architecture that is, I call it usually microservice architecture, where we have state machines of state machines, which you can use to compose bigger state machines and something like that. So that was my personal topic in 2017. What was your personal topic of the year?
Oh, the personal one. I guess it's too hard to tell, because I've touched a lot of things, I guess, in the app we developed. Like from the MVVM perspective, maybe it was the most exciting for me, because we use custom reactive MVVM in the app, and it kind of consumed me for months or so, and I just thought how to apply it everywhere, how to make a single activity app from that perspective. It's kind of hard to tell from words, but maybe sometime we'll just publish it as open source and maybe we'll see it.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I guess the personal one was it.
But is it more like traditional model view model, like having multiple fields the view can observe on?
Yeah, something like this. Basically, I don't know, did you hear about Microsoft MVVM? Basically, Microsoft invented MVVM some time ago. There is a view model and a view and a binder, but you don't see a binder because it's basically automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the main points of MVVM is that there is no binder, and you basically make fields on your view model and make fields on the view, and everything kind of works automatically. Mm-hmm. We have kind of a metal approach to this, because we use RxJava for this, and we don't want to introduce a lot of reflection or something like this, like hacks or any intermediate layer that is not easily understandable.
It's also not data binding, I assume, right?
No. The concept is quite similar, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we should have to open source it and maybe show people how we use it.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And what about the community? I guess this one should be actually obvious.
So go ahead. What do you think is the trend in the community this year?
For me, I think it was basically Kotlin all the year. This announcement from Google was kind of shocking for everyone. I don't understand why. Maybe you'll explain it to me. From my perspective, basically, it was like Google announced that they support PNGs or something. Because, okay, we support PNGs. It's like it's official. I don't get it. Because you can't actually break bytecode.
Yeah.
Because Kotlin is basically a standard library as a basic Java artifact and a Gradle plugin that basically adds another compilation step, which produces Java bytecode, which is eventually dexed, and you have it on your phone.
Yeah.
I don't understand how is it possible to break it actually at some point, but I guess for many people it was a limiting factor that Google doesn't actually embrace it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have talked to some friend of mine who works on an agency, and basically, I don't know how it is in other countries, but here in Germany, if you are an agency and you build an app for someone, then the owner of this code, which is the end result of this of the contract, is owned by the customer, right, and not by the agency. So what he said is that in the past it was hard for them to convince people or customers to write their app in Kotlin, because you know the customer would have said something like, but what if I want to continue development of this app in the future by my own, and then I would like to have Java because I know Java, or I have some Java developers, or it's easy to hire Java developers or something like that. So that seems to me a valid argument. But the question, what would have happened otherwise, like if Google would have not announced official Kotlin support, I think there would have not much changed, right?
Well, from my perspective, the official embracement or something like that, mm-hmm. it doesn't actually produce more knowledge for developers.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it doesn't increase a developer base size. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Basically, if you want to be a Kotlin developer, you just have to write Kotlin code, basically. And you have to learn it yourself, because you don't have like any certification or something saying that to become a Kotlin developer. So I don't know. Maybe it's just some kind of a psychological thing.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I agree.
And my kind of disappointment was, again, I'm sorry, I'm going to rant a lot in this episode, is that I've analyzed Git history for Kotlin repository some time ago, and there is actually zero comments from Google.
Mm-hmm.
So if you saw the panel at the end of the Kotlin conf, they actually discussed it briefly, and the plan is to form a committee and basically make a Kotlin a community-driven language, but you actually can contribute to Kotlin right now. This open source. There is like a 50 people team at JetBrains at this time working on Kotlin, but please notice that this is a standard library, language, IDE support, and other support, I guess. I don't know, maybe Team City or something. So it's just not a lot of people working in this language, but I just hope that Google gets more actually involved in this.
Mm.
Because Google has a lot of talented developers, and I think they can actually improve the language and the tooling and so on. So I'm kind of hopeful for that, but there is actually a funny story that Artem was kind of depressed after this announcement.
Why?
Well, the reason is quite simple, because before that we were like hipsters.
I see.
Because we had a project, basically 100% Kotlin code, and we had it for a couple of years, and it was like this extreme. Because, oh, guys, you're like crazy, because you write in Kotlin and want to support it and everything like that. And after that, we just became common people.
Too bad for you.
Yeah, so he was kind of depressed like for a week. He just went over the office.
Oh.
With the coffee and cigarettes, like, you know.
Yeah, another thing that was really, really nice about the announcement of Kotlin official support by Google is that the number of people attending meetups or Kotlin meetups, at least here in Munich, went, was dramatically increased, so a huge boost. Like before or 2 years ago, it was like 5 people attending a Kotlin meetup, and now the whole room is basically full and full of people interested in Kotlin. So that's a nice side effect. It really have started after the official announcement of Google.
Yeah, so basically we went from Haskell to, I don't know, Scala at its best days.
Yeah, right. So let's move on. We can also start with that one. What was the announcement of the year for you? I mean, for the community, it seems like it was Kotlin. Do you have any other announcement in mind that was also worthwhile to mention now?
Yeah, I actually have one announcement that nobody actually heard about. I don't know, for some reason, because It was actually a single talk at DroidCon, I think, and maybe a couple of blog posts from One Password or something. Maybe you heard about it. It's called an Open YOLO.
Like, oh, no. What's that?
That's a funny name. Basically, it's an OpenID specification for password management, I guess.
Oh.
And password autofilling and everything like that. Basically, it is supported already by 1Password, Dashlane, LastPass, and Google Smart Lock. And it has a single API and SDK. Basically, you call a single method and you get a generated password and it's automatically synced and everything like that. It was kind of nice, and I just want that more people actually hear about it and maybe use it. So we'll put the link in the show notes and maybe consider adding it to your application, because it's quite nice and actually opens a lot of possibilities, because it improves retention, I guess. Because when your users come back and they don't know the password, it's quite a regular situation actually, and it just automatically autofilled and auto-logged if you want. It is an opt-in, of course. So yeah, it was kind of nice. And another one is Reagent by Jake Wharton, of course. I don't know if there is an Android podcast without Jake mention. Basically, he started to rewriting RxJava using coroutines.
Oh yeah, we have talked about it also a little bit in the previous episode.
Yeah, it is a highly controversial topic.
Yeah,
as we find out, but it can bring a lot of benefits. I see at least two of them. The first one is a single thread in ideal case scenario. Basically, you can optimize all your background work to perform on a single thread, because we have like 30 or 40 background threads in our application at this point. And it can reduce them without the efficiency loss. And at the same time, I think it can open a better development experience for end users. For us developers, because I don't know about you, but when I open a RxJava open source code, I kind of can understand what happens, but I'm not sure if I can introduce some feature or something that will not break everything around, because the operator's declaration is understandable, but you want to consider a lot of things in regard a lot of things about operator fusion and optimizations and multi-threading, and not a lot of people actually know how to do it properly, because it's a kind of a complex topic. And at this time, I think David, Artem, and Jake understand what actually happens, and because they are maintainers, and other people actually kind of understand what happens.
Yeah.
So maybe it will make things better. And what about you?
Yeah, I totally agree on that. I have also had some experience now in my new company where I've tried to introduce this state management thing concept. And I'm not saying that I have super knowledge of RxJava in terms of how internal operators and threading is actually implemented. So I do understand the idea behind it, but I haven't got too deep into the actual implementation details.
And there is not a lot of talks about it.
Yeah, actually, I have applied the talk like demystifying RxJava by re-implementing it from scratch this year. I would like to focus on threading and writing operators and something like that. But yeah, in general, so what I was trying to say is, in the past, I have implemented the state machine thing with RxJava, and also in my previous company, many people felt really comfortable working with RxJava. But now in my new company, it was a little bit like there is some knowledge, some base knowledge of RxJava, but when doing something more complicated like state management, it actually shouldn't be that complicated to build a state machine and state management by using RxJava. But it turns out with this whole chain of observables and operators, it's getting a little bit harder than it could be or should be. To understand for new people joining the company, and for user developer to look at the same piece of code after a few months or something like that. So maybe there would be a chance to use coroutines rather than RxJava for asynchronous execution in some state machines. That would simplify reading the code a lot. Yeah, I haven't made up my mind yet about this, but that's definitely true that coroutines could simplify a little bit over here and there your code. And yeah,
basically, not sure. We are trying to outsource all multithreading to JetBrains.
Yeah. And another nice side effect would be, at least for the company I'm working now, is that we write basically the state machine stuff in Kotlin. And if we would use coroutines, we could use Kotlin native somewhere in the future. So it's not going to happen in the next few months, but maybe in a year or 1.5 years from now, we could simply reuse this state machine thing on iOS 2. And then we basically have to render the state in native UI and maybe also the network calls or something like that is more platform specific, or database stuff like that would be in the platform specific manner. But the state machine thing could be really be shared. So
yeah, but we have a long road ahead, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
Because
definitely.
It's a perspective, but nobody actually tried it. It's scale.
Yeah,
that's a buzzword. So yeah, I'm kind of optimistic about it, and as I see, at least from JetBrains announcements, it is kind of goal of theirs. So basically make a multi-platform more widespread thing. Maybe yeah. Start with JavaScript and so on, because it's kind of easier, and to move on to native as a more serious note. But I guess they've made their KotlinConf app multi-platform, mm-hmm. And it's kind of works.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe we're here, but it's also has a little bit of traction, because you have to introduce your coworkers to Kotlin,
yeah.
And you have to introduce your iOS team to Kotlin, kind of.
Yes, yeah.
So they actually understand what is going on, because I don't know if I was advised to put some magical Swift code in our application, I would be like, I would be kind of surprised, but.
Yeah, definitely.
I didn't know what my reaction would be, actually. But. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. And obviously the iOS developers would say, okay, if we would write a shared library or some shared code between our platforms, we should write that in Swift, and you should use the JNI to to talk to it.
It can build on Linux. So.
Yeah. I don't believe in this mantra or slogan that there should be one language to rule all, But maybe a little bit of sharing code could be possible, but the KotlinConf app that JetBrains has presented, where they have written actually the iOS app in the iOS UI in Kotlin, that was really strange. But maybe I'm just old school fashion, but that felt very, very strange. To complete it, what was my announcement of the year? It was so I take the easy one here. It was Jake Wharton joining Google.
So, yeah, it was not software related.
Yeah, not really.
I think just that the Square team was and is, I don't know how to put it. It actually has a lot of people that have a lot of experience in areas not related to Android only.
Yeah.
And Jesse Wilson came from Google and worked on JSON before and on Juice, I guess.
And also some parts of the Android SDK were also written by him. If I remember correctly.
He has kind of this perspective, what was wrong and what can be done better. And at the same time, guys from Square are actually kind of pragmatic.
Yes.
So if you actually look at the libraries, they don't create any framework or something. Oh. They always like these pragmatic pieces of code that actually do one job and don't want to attempt anything else. So I want to think that Jake brings this culture to Android as the case and documentation and something like that. And because there's always should be a person that asks, are we doing this right? Or maybe we should just reduce this.
Yeah.
And I hope they don't just put him on documentation just rewrite all the documentation in Kotlin will be fine. Because he has a great talent and this pragmatic approach actually can help Android in some cases. So yeah, it would be nice.
Yeah. Okay, so if you would have to give an award for an open source library of the year, which library would get this award?
Well, I'll repeat your answer, which was kind of before in a similar area. I actually like Spec, and I gave a talk about Kotlin and Max Payne related to it on a local Kotlin user group. And the surprising part was that Hedy from the Dungeon Brains team actually wrote me said, okay, so you talk much, so let's just discuss things.
That's a nice way to get started in an open source project.
Yeah.
But no pressure.
So basically they asked about our experience with Spec, and because we have a huge code base and a huge Spec only tests, because we don't actually use JUnit at all.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down a proposal with suggested features or removal APIs or refinement, and we discussed it a couple of times, so yeah, it was nice. And actually, Spec brings a lot of advantages to testing. I think it can just improve the testing culture at all, because why people don't write tests, then they don't want to. It actually requires you to think about your architecture and design things in a testable manner, of course, but if you repeat a single test and their conditions and preparations over and over again, it gets kind of repeating and you lose an interest.
Yeah.
And I think Spec can actually improve that. And I think the more Kotlin adoption raises, more people actually try Spec. We have a little bit of issues with JUnit 5 related things from IDE support and Gradle support. But I think sometime will pass and it will be actually maybe kind of moving for developers, if it makes any sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah, it's really interesting to see how we usually write our unit tests. I mean, if we would write, of the way we write unit tests, if we would write our application, and I mean our production code in that way, no separation of concerns, all in one single function, that would be a huge mess, right? So I think tools like Spec help there a little bit, moving towards a more cleaner approach, how you structure your code and something like that. So.
Yeah, there is an issue in this, because it's just tests.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm putting air quotes here, but it's kind of a repeating argument in discussions regarding tests.
Yeah, I think that's totally worth an whole episode on its own, maybe with Artem Beck or you two guys, because you are more more into Spec, of course, because you are a main contributor and maintainer of it. But yeah, I think also the audience would be interested in hearing more about it.
So what about you?
Yeah, what was my open source library of the year? So I have two libraries. One is Room, the database library, and that's really a great library from my point of view. It's really inspired by Retrofit, and let's say that you only have to define an interface and don't have to care about too much about the implementation details that are generated behind the scenes. And the funny thing is that I have done something similar for Android Wear API 2 years ago or 3 years ago, when the first Android Wear 1.0 SDK was published. It was really painful to write the communication between you and your app and your phone. And there I thought, actually, Retrofit is doing that really nice with just implementing an interface. Let's try do this with Android Wear 2. Well, it never ended up in something production ready, but the idea was nice. But I haven't had too much time, and there wasn't too much interest from the projects I have worked on to spend more time on Android Wear. The thing is, it didn't click for me to apply the same pattern or the same strategy like defining an interface on databases and database as a database layer somehow. So huge shout out to the folks worked on Vroom. I really, really enjoy doing that. And it solves actually a problem that many people have tried to solve. And I know also that Artem has worked on Store.io.
Yeah.
And there were other solutions out there, but Vroom is really doing an awesome job.
And what do you think about the scaled light library?
Yeah, I like that too. I really like that too. The main point for me is I really like to stay in, let's say, the SQL language as much as possible. And that's something that other libraries or other ORMs try too hard to move away by building their own query thing. And I do understand that people might be confused by using SQL because there's some new stuff to learn and something like that. But, you know, SQL is a really, really nice and powerful language, actually. And yeah, if you have understood and learned it once, you can also write backend queries and basically everywhere you have SQL support for almost, at least for relational database.
Yeah, basically all ORMs kind of repeating Hibernate mistakes.
Yeah.
And eventually they'll, I guess, come up with some, not HQL, but something different.
Yeah, like, and then you have to learn that, then you move to the next platform or next ORM, and you have to relearn the whole ORM thing too.
There is actually a talk by Jake Wharton.
And Alex Strong, right? Alex Strong.
About embracing SQL.
Yeah.
Like re-embracing SQL, because it's kind of waves and development. Let's do ORM, let's do Hibernate, let's back, let's go back to SQL and so on.
Definitely. We will put a link in the show notes because it's a great talk. And actually, that was, so if I would have to pick the best talk for, I think it was 2015 or something like that, it would be Alex Strong talking about why they have started building SQL Delight and SQL Bright. And more focused on SQL Delight, but he really showcased really in a really great and understandable fashion why you should stick with SQL and what problems they have tried to solve before getting into SQL-based solution, which eventually was SQL Delight. But that was also a really, really great talk by Alex Strong. I will put a link to the show notes too.
And it actually, again, shows a pragmatic approach by Square guys.
Definitely. Definitely.
Because they just think about problems from a little bit different perspective.
Yeah. And you also always have the feeling that they don't have to rush and put and publish something just to publish something or publish a solution that is okay-ish, but is doing too much and not well thought out. But you never have that feeling on any of Square's libraries. They always solve a very little problem, but a problem that is really having a huge impact of when you write an application or something like that. Yeah.
So we're talking so much about Square and Jake, so maybe Square HRs?
Yeah, they should give us some money. I mean, some advertisement for Square.
Yep.
But Square is a really interesting company to work for, I guess. Not sure about the product. I have never used it, but the library is man. And the people working there.
Again, Square HRs, please.
Yeah.
Our contacts are below.
Yeah. And then let's switch to another company because I have said that I also have a second library which would deserve the award of the year for open source library of the year. And it's from the folks from Airbnb and it's Lottie.
Oh, yeah. Really like Lottie. Yeah. It's a great one.
Yeah. I don't have much to add here, but it's a really great library. It really simplifies a lot of animation stuff and I really like it.
The only thing I can suggest is just sit down with your designers, if it's possible, and maybe try to export to Lottie and run on Lottie at the time they export the animations. Because it can be kind of tricky with the compatibility, because Lottie doesn't support everything. So it's kind of best to sit down with designers and actually do it step by step, so they actually see it, how it works. But it's a great library and a great idea.
Oh, I've just looked at my notes and I have also a third open source library, which actually is not an open source library, but should be part of the announcement of the year.
One more thing.
Yeah, there's one more thing. I totally have forgotten to mention that before as my announcement of the year, apart from Jake Wharton joining Google, which is the Android Gradle plugin 3.0, which was a huge step into faster builds, right?
Well, we are kind of affected by Kotlin compilation most of the time.
Okay.
And we don't have a lot of modules. So it was nice, but not that nice, as I imagine for us people.
Yeah, for us it worked out pretty well to migrate our whole application to this new Gradle 4, or was it Gradle 3 APIs? I think it was Gradle 4 APIs and the Android Gradle plugin 3.0. Did a good job. So shout out to the folks working on that. Awesome job.
So we said so much nice things. Maybe let's talk about our disappointments.
Yeah.
What do you think was your disappointment or like a mistake of the year? I hope there was none.
Well, let's start with the disappointments. there were two disappointments I would like to mention. The first thing is that we are in 2018 now, and still navigation in Android apps is so hard to implement in terms of, should I have now my click listener start a new activity? Should I do the fragment transaction in my click listener? Should it be somewhere in the presenter? Should it be in the business logic? I mean, that's really disappointing, and there are so many ways and different opinion on it. And it's not a bad thing to have different approaches and different opinions, but none of them seem to be perfect. And I really would like to see, let's say, some recommended way or, let's say, best practices on this stuff. So I definitely feel there's some lack of in this area, on this topic.
I think that Android just needs to scale back on things. We have transitions, activity transitions, fragment transitions, fragments, activities, view groups, views, and so on, and kind of complicates things, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, I can be totally wrong, but I think in iOS, there is only a view controller, basically.
Yeah.
And you kind of compose them in different ways to achieve, complex behaviors, and two controllers side by side, one controller in another controller. Again, I'm sorry if I'm totally wrong, but...
that's correct, as far as I know.
That's my picture. And actually, it is kind of enough for many people. So I think if Android just scaled back and just used views for everything, and maybe kind of suggested some patterns how to do it properly, considering state management at the same time, I think it might actually fix a lot of things. Because I don't know if anyone remembers, but we had days where action bars were part of activities and you cannot actually do anything with them.
So the good old days.
Yeah. So now there is single toolbar as a view.
Yeah.
And it's actually fine for everyone. So I don't know. Maybe they need a square approach and maybe make a retrospect about developer experience and what people actually don't like or like a lot. Because there is actually, I think that there is can be difficulties in framework development as well regarding this, because one people support view transitions and other people support transitions between activities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of different, and you cannot compose this or reuse this because they are actually different. So maybe even from the framework development perspective, it can be just a little bit better. If they had a single point of failure, a single point of modification.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. there is a lot of things deprecated on Android, but nothing actually gets removed. So
yeah.
I'm just sometimes afraid that Google doesn't step on Microsoft's shoes in compatibility requirements and so on, because if our listeners actually use Macs and haven't used Windows in any time before, I'm happy for you. But actually, as a Windows policy in development APIs is that all of them are compatible. So basically nothing should be breaked. And it's kind of limiting for them because they introduce new APIs every release. And this Windows 10 and universal applications, and it at the same time they have VN API or something like that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it all should work before, and WPF, and oh yeah, oh god. I'm just afraid that Android actually had some courage to forget about everything that happened before, because I've listened to some guys that actually worked on the framework in early Android days.
Yeah.
And they kind of admit that things didn't go well at that time.
So, of course, as as with this, with our apps too, right?
And some design decisions are actually genius. A lot of them, like the whole resource system. It's a possibility, but something that maybe are not done quite well, and maybe we should just look back and said, okay, just forget about it. But it will take some initiative, at least from the company inside.
Usually we complain a lot about APIs and stuff like that, but totally that there was also some very, very good parts in there, not SDK too. So yeah. And one thing also I would like to mention is that you always have the feeling as an Android developer that on iOS more SDK support for navigation, for instance, as we're talking about this, but that's actually not that true. I mean,
they have their own set of problems.
They have their own set of problems, and there have also been developed some patterns over time, like the coordinator pattern that is used in Android and in iOS for navigating through different view controllers. So also Apple doesn't have, set a golden standard in terms of navigation in their documentation or in their APIs. So there was always some kind of community effort needed to make that a little bit better. That's all I have to add for iOS development, because I'm not a major iOS developer.
The thing I can add is just they actually remove APIs. They don't just deprecate it, but a couple of releases come and they actually get removed.
So the mistake of the year, and it's at the same time a disappointment of the year, was that we have started building an app in my previous company fully optimized for tablet and a phone at the same time. And it was so annoying so hard to build a good tablet UI. Not because there is the resource system, as you have said before, is not working well. That's totally not the case. That's actually pretty, pretty awesome. But if you have to implement, it was for a news magazine, by the way, so just as a little bit more context for you listeners. So it was for a news magazine, for a sports magazine. And there is basically a huge recycle view where you can scroll through. And on phone, it's just a linear layout manager. But on a recycle view, you would need something like a grid layout manager. But the problem with grid layout manager is that the grids, all or the elements in this grid have to have the same size. And if you stagger a grid layout manager, then they don't have to have the same height anymore as with the grid layout manager. But then there are some other things, like introducing section is super hard and super awkward. So my disappointment was building good tablet UIs is hard by using the default layout managers. And the mistake I have made is I have tried to implement my own layout manager, which is actually pretty hard because there's a lot of things and optimizations you have to apply to make it work somehow efficiently. So I'm not sure if it's if calling this a mistake, like writing your own layout manager, is a mistake. But at the end, I wish that there would be something from Google, and not that I have to put that much time and effort into a half-baked good solution for a layout manager optimized for tablet UIs, which is more than just displaying a grid or something like that. So what about you? What was your disappointment of the year?
Actually, your tablet disappointment made me think, are tablets actually alive on Android?
Oh, that's a whole topic for its own. So the company I've worked for before have spent a lot of money into tablet UI, and I'm pretty sure it's not worth it, to be honest. I can't share numbers, but I can't believe that there was that many users, and that many users will be buying tablets in the future, that it's worthwhile to spend that much money on a tablet UI. And I'm really talking about not just applying some more spacing and padding and using a grid view instead of a linear layout manager. We really have made some really good looking thing into this app, optimized for tablet. But at the same time, I feel that Chromebooks and Chrome OS is far from, let's say, perfect. But I have the feeling that this is the better Android tablet is to use it on as a Chromebook and install Android apps on your Chromebook.
It's the same question about Android Wear, but
yeah, definitely.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it's complicated. So what was your disappointment of the year?
My disappointment was a kind of personal one, because it is Artom's departure from Juno.
Oh.
It actually kind of struck me. yeah, so basically I've joined Juno mostly because of Artom, because I kind of share his mindset a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we have common opinions on things. And at the same time, I learn from him. And maybe he's learned something from me. But yeah, and and the funny story is we actually met because of this podcast. I was listening to this podcast for a while. We had a conference here in Minsk. And Artom asked some questions on the mic in the audience. And I recognized his voice because I haven't seen him.
Yeah, that's something really, really interesting. And I heard from a lot of people, like, how does Artom actually look like? Because, you know, also on Twitter and on his social and web presence stuff, he always have this picture with the cat. And
he's an AI, basically, people. Just believe us. It's a huge mainframe, and that's all. I have actually come up to him and said hi and said thanks for the podcast, and we actually talked a little bit. It was an interesting experience. And then I joined Juno and this podcast a little. So a full circle, I guess. But yeah, it's kind of hard to lose people, even if they are actually kind of nearby, because we are on the same planet and there is internet and everything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And also, by the way, it makes it a little bit harder to record more episodes frequently if we live in three different time zones, because Artom is now living in San Francisco.
Yeah, but I'm happy for him because
of course.
He has great opportunities here and new experiences and so on. And maybe a little bit more opportunities to make the world a bit a better place and make our software experience a better place, maybe,
mm-hmm.
by actually publishing something. or maybe just for Lyft developers, but yeah. So, what was your learning of the year? Apart from the things that tablets are not used anymore.
Yeah. My learning of the year was that I have started doing a little bit more machine learning. I mean, I've done some machine learning during college and university, but that was more like from a mathematical point of view, and I actually wasn't able to build anything for the real world.
But graphs were actually fine, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was basically my learning, that AI, and machine learning is something big, and you better should start doing machine learning too, otherwise others will take over, and
Skynet will take you over eventually, people. Just
yep,
just sit down and enjoy a ride to a John Connor experience.
Yeah, what was your learning of the year?
My learning of the year was mostly Docker. CI in general, and UI testing. Because after Artom departure, I've kind of took over it a little bit and managed the infrastructure and kind of optimized it and solved problems that we faced. I have a lot of thoughts about UI testing, and I think it deserves another episode.
Definitely. And I would be very interested in hearing your opinions about it.
But yeah, it was kind of nice to learn Docker and actually write something, write Docker images, test them out. It reminded me like some hacker ways in some ways, because I kind of miss toying with Linux. I used it at the university for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting, kind of tedious, because sometimes you upgrade your kernel and everything just stops booting suddenly. So eventually I came to Mac, but at the same time I would actually kill for Docker in the university days, because we had some studies regarding system administration. Mm-hmm. And I always put everything into a script. So basically I just came to the university, showed it to the class, and just run a script, and everything just works. So basically all setup is in place. And Docker simplifies it a lot. So basically it provides you with a reproducible environment by default.
Mm-hmm.
And in these days, it would be just a perfect match for me. It is actually a perfect match these days, and especially for these DevOps-related tasks and so on. But yeah, it's just a great idea, and I think we should actually invent it a little bit earlier.
Which also reminds me in my college or university days when it took me hours and hours to install some C or C++ library on dependencies.
Wow, yeah. Was,
that would be really awesome to have just been provided by Docker image by the professor or by the instructor. Yeah.
Actually, my girlfriend at this time learned a little bit about virtual machines and so on. And she actually learned about virtual machines, and host and guest operating system and how they work, the hypervisors and so on. I've explained her Docker, and then she was like, "What the hell, dude? Why do we need all this like host, guest, hypervisor stuff if we just can use Docker and it will solve all our problems?" So it's actually obvious for people that are not actually doing DevOps every day.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Okay, let's move on to the last topic I have on my list, which is how do we feel about augmented reality? It wasn't such a huge topic in Android development. More, I have the feeling that iOS is more into this. What are your feelings about it?
Well, I don't know, actually. I think on Android it is kind of hard, I guess, at this point, because maybe it will require some processing power that is actually varies from device to device.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Apple actually made kind of a better job regarding this. They have their own hardware with their own chips actually optimized for this task and the SDK. So I don't know, we'll just see about it.
Yeah, I have mixed feeling about it. Not sure how to feel about it actually. But it's, I don't know, for me, it's for now, it's more like a way to play around as a developer with some stuff. But if you see all those iOS apps or iPad apps where you see people walking with the iPad around, and I can't imagine doing that for more than two minutes, to be honest. Like, all my arms will be hurt by the weight of the iPad, which, yeah, you know. So it really seems like the early stage, but yeah, could be something more coming in the future.
It's great for planning your IKEA setup.
Yeah.
When you create something, you should understand how people will actually use this.
Yeah.
So I kind of have a little bit of concern regarding this, because I don't see a lot of people embracing Google Glass, and it was kind of AR, I guess, because everything just projected in your eyes. And I don't see a lot of people actually carrying the phones around and putting them from their pockets and actually like looking at something. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
But it is an interesting application of the technology.
Yeah. I mean, a nice thing for developers to play around.
And people are actually interested in it.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, one thing we have forgot, but I'm not sure I don't have much to add to this, but is there an Android API of the Year award we should give?
My favorite one was Spence. This is kind of getting old, of course. There is an article that is named Spence, a powerful concept, I guess. It was published like 4 years ago, but still, if there is some need in some custom animation or some custom behavior for text, I often just suggest using a span, and I think more people actually should use them. They actually can be applied in notifications, because notifications accept char sequences, and spans are char sequences, your notification will actually render it correctly. So yeah, it's kind of nice. My least favorite, especially these days, is runtime permissions. I don't know. What do you think about runtime permissions implementations on Android?
Regarding the concrete implementation, not sure. It's okay-ish. I think there are some good APIs and some not bad APIs, but APIs that could be probably implemented or designed better around permissions. I can't remember the exact name, but there's something should show permission ratio something. It's a little bit weird, but runtime permissions in general are a good thing and should be come to Android even earlier.
But the API, actually, I posted a tweet some time ago. Now that is kind of opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Yes, this exact call is like, should you show this rationale? It's kind of decides behavior for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is a good idea because every application actually implements things in a different way. But I don't know. I guess if you are familiar with the Leanback API, it is kind of opinionated as well. But mm-hmm. It is kind of limiting your usage to actually apply for TV interface.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it doesn't feel the same way because you have actually a choice what to do in different situations, but with permissions you don't have this one.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind of strange. But yeah, definitely check out Spans and we'll post a link to the show notes.
So my Android API of the year is, well, it's pretty simple. I haven't, I have looked up what new APIs have been added over the last year, so in 2017, and there was basically only one thing worthwhile mention for me, which was shared memory API. Not sure if you would ever have a use case to use it, at least in 2018, but back in, when was it? Somewhere in 2010 or 2011, I was building on a music player, and there I have had two processors, because back then memory was like, the devices has some memory of 128 RAM or something like that.
So yeah, kids, memory was expensive.
Yeah. There were some days where memory was expensive, yeah. And back then I have written some music player just for my own. I never have finished and published it, as always. But I have started building this music player as a single process. Then it turned out, oh, I need to load image. Picasso and stuff like that was not invented back then. So just displaying covers of your MP3s was really a pain in the ass, and you were always almost hitting out of memory exceptions. And do you remember this cover flow stuff that was on iTunes and iOS very popular? So I tried to re-implement that and I had some reflections and stuff like that. So really memory hungry app. And then I decided, okay, let's introduce two processors, because then I have twice the heap, you know.
Easy.
Then you have one process for the playback of the MP3 files, and only one process for the UI. And I tried to sync it very hard, but a shared memory back then would have helped or simplified that a little bit more. So I'm not sure if I would give an award for this API in 2017, but something probably worthwhile to mention. And yeah, in 2017 or 2018, I don't think there's much apps having use case for this API, but you never know.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next? I think that was all the Android related topics we would like to cover in this episode, right?
Yay.
Okay. There are one or two things not Android related left. Have you learned a new programming language? Which one and why?
Okay, so I did not learn any language. I'm getting more familiar with Swift, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I kind of enjoy reading the iOS team code, because it has kind of interesting concepts. And I'm trying to reimagine them for our application,
mm-hmm.
and maybe just for myself. But yeah, mostly Swift is actually a quite nice language. It has an interesting history, and I admire Chris Lettner, the LVM creator, and Clang creator.
Yeah.
These are actually interesting technologies that put everything in perspective again. Mm-hmm. When it came out and kind of tried to move GCC from its positions, because suddenly there wasn't a single compilator,
mm-hmm.
But a second one which actually worked better and provided better warnings and so on. And Swift has the same foundation, and again, a really pragmatic design. So yeah, it was kind of nice, and I tried to read about it more, because I think it is important for us to just put things into perspective and look into other platforms, because we are not the first people on the planet problem managing any issue in a way.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like if we look better at Spring in early Android days, probably notice dependency injection before Dagger came out.
Mm-hmm.
It is a nice pattern, and people actually use it for like years for us. And the same goes for other mobile platforms. I had an idea actually for a blog post series where I just get a Palm Pre SDK and try to make an app using VBOS. Because it's just interesting for me to take a look at how applications were managed and developed before us.
And it was actually not a bad operating system, not a bad API.
I think it was ahead
of time.
And it had a lot of interesting ideas that actually, like this whole switching applications using cards and everything like that. It actually came from WebOS. And it was kind of interesting. And actually, everything is an app, because it was like JavaScript and something like that, if I remember correctly. And I think it's a great opportunity for us to actually look at other people and other platforms and think about it, because when I actually wrote a proposal for Spec, I took a look at other libraries, and there is actually quite a number of libraries that use Spec-like API on iOS and using Swift, basically this BDD style.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of interesting what they actually use and how do they actually implement it on top of the iOS XK test infrastructure. I actually enjoy using that. And what about you?
So the programming language I have learned this year is TypeScript. Since we have already talked about JavaScript and Kotlin combined to JavaScript, I think TypeScript is the most pragmatic programming language I have used since years. Maybe Kotlin is also in that range, but the way TypeScript deals with, let's say, compatibility with JavaScript and which kind of features were added and why they are added, it was really, really awesome, and I really enjoyed using TypeScript. So TypeScript is something really, really nice. And not sure about you, but I would definitely prefer TypeScript over Kotlin for writing JavaScript code. And I also think that JavaScript is not that bad as people were talking about or complaining about. The issue with JavaScript is more like JavaScript was not invented to use in an object-oriented way, but people have started bringing object-oriented concepts into JavaScript, and that was a really pain in the ass, I think. But if you use JavaScript just for functions in a functional way, then I think JavaScript is actually not that bad. Of course, it has its pitfalls and design flaws, as any other language has too. And that's where TypeScript really kicks in, like with the compiler, which is blazing fast, incremental, with the IDE support of Visual Studio Code, with in general the language design and just having types and a type system, but which is also quite flexible if you want not to use it. So a really, really pragmatic language. I really enjoyed using it.
Yeah, it's actually quite kind of interesting. If I was told 10 years ago or so about that Microsoft will release a kind of open source language that people actually use and kind of enjoy, I would be really surprised and probably would not believe you. But it actually kind of nice, yes. The thing with JavaScript, I think everyone is missing that it is an ancient language.
Yeah.
You have no idea how ancient it is. And it actually, I think, was developed before Python and Ruby in a way so that Python and especially Ruby actually add kind of a dynamism in the language in a way, because basically you have a dynamic type system that not a static one, where actually types are recognized on the fly during the execution. And in Ruby, if I remember correctly, you can actually add methods to an object, not to a class, but to an object in runtime. And JavaScript was developed even before that. So if you just think about it, it puts things in a better perspective. But I think, TypeScript is a better implementation on top of JavaScript. It actually, if you remember, there was CoffeeScript before.
Oh man.
So it was just like jQuery on steroids. But yeah, TypeScript is really nice. It's kind of a shame that Dart kind of failed, I guess. I don't know. Because Dart, Dart was announced like this language that solves all these problems. But I don't know, it just didn't get any widespread usage, and they are kind of reusing it for Flutter. But yeah, I just wonder what happened with Dart.
Oh. Yeah, hard to say. I think if Flutter could get some traction, then Dart could survive somehow. And also in Dart 2.0, they bring a type system. So it's moving, not completely moving away from a dynamically typed language, but also add some statical type thing and also some other improvements. But yeah, there is nowadays, apart from maybe Flutter, there's not much use cases for Dart. Yeah.
I had a weird feeling right now. Do you think that we are getting like old people stage? Because we're kind of thinking about, oh, in my days, there are these languages and these systems, and it is kind of amazing that every year everything just moves forward and forward and forward.
It is. We are getting old, man.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the next thing.
Get me my blanket, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and goes hand in hand with the next thing I would like to mention is that I have read some tweet of yours where you said that you have started listening to podcasts and start reading books. Well, not sure why I'm laughing, but what is the motivation behind it?
Because you're laughing because in this concept I am getting an old man and you are still a young one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It is interesting because I actually stopped listening to music and podcasts during my commute and started reading books more. And it is nice, actually, because I think we are living in the age where there is so much information and we're trying to consume all of it, that sometimes we just miss quiet time, maybe a long time, just reading some book and like communicating with an author of the book. And just thinking about its ideas and not actually applying them, but just putting them in our mind and thinking about them and talking with people about them. And I just read some books about psychology, and it actually kind of helps to put things into perspective regarding your communication with other people, which is kind of important in software development, because there's always a team and you should actually communicate with them and somehow to work with them. Even if you don't like them much or they don't understand everything you don't understand. Like in the example with Kotlin and RxJava, like if you bring this knowledge to another team, not everybody will just, oh, this is great, you know RxJava, okay, let's just use it. People like skeptical about things, and you better know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can just suggest to like put your headphones out and maybe bring a book.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, especially communication is a skill that is very, very important and crucial within a company to work successfully. And I have the feeling that that's something that in general our industry could improve, especially as a software developer. I think my communication skills are not that good as they should be, and there would be so much problems I could have avoided if I just have communicated or talked to people more and in a better way. Yeah.
So yeah, just being an old man sometimes helps.
Okay, old man. So what is a book you would recommend for our listeners to read and for me?
Oh, it is a hard question. There is a recent one. It's called An Art of Not Giving a F. You can finish it with the word yourself. It is a nice book, actually. It is a short one, but it's kind of refreshing. So you know, this is a small one I can recommend.
Okay, we will put a link in the show notes.
And what about you? What can you tell about your what did you do besides software development, maybe, that you, that you actually enjoyed doing?
Well, I'm younger than you, obviously, because I'm not reading that much books.
Yes, Anne, you can learn something from me, you know?
Yeah, definitely. No, I haven't read much in the last year, but yeah, if I did, it was more non-technical stuff and non, let's say, inspirational stuff. It was more like
comic books,
thrillers or adventures or James Bondy-ish stuff. Yeah, and apart from coding, I do a lot of sports, and that's basically what I do in the spare time.
Football. Or soccer?
Football. No, don't call it soccer. It's football, man.
Okay, it's over. The podcast is over. Okay, thank you.
Yep. All right. So let's wrap this up.
Okay. So I guess we should try to record more this year.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. Artem actually had a thought recently that the Talking Kotlin podcast has more podcasts in a year that we have for the whole run.
Maybe, yes.
So maybe our listeners can write us and just ask for some topics they want to discuss.
Yeah.
Maybe with some people they want to, or just talking like me and Hannes and me and Artem, or three of us together. So maybe if you have some suggestions, we are welcome to hear it. I think there's plenty of ways to communicate with us, but maybe contact us on Twitter or something, or on GitHub, and we'll think about it.
Awesome. Yep, I guess that's all. So, talk to you next time.
Okay, bye.
I'm stopping the recording now.